Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy Podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Hi, friends. Today on the show, we're sharing a pregnancy and birth story I'm very eager to hear, but it is a story that I've had people reach out and say, can we talk about HG? Can we talk about hyperemesis gravidarum and what it's like to be a plus size person with HG? So I'm going to welcome Alyssa to the show, and then we're going to talk about what HG is and hear her story unfold. Welcome, Alyssa.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's surreal to hear your voice.
Yeah, I really appreciate you reaching out and being like, Jen, I've got to talk about this. And I'm like, yes, Alyssa, we need to talk about this. So I really appreciate you.
I appreciate you letting me come on. It's nice to have somebody actually care and want to hear, you know, what it's like to live with HG. So thank you.
Of course. And again, you are not alone, but I'm sure this experience has felt incredibly isolating. So let's talk about what HG is. According to the National Library of Medicine, hyperemesis gravidarum, also known as HG, and Jen will, myself and I will say HG because that is so much easier than trying to pronounce this mouthful, but it is extreme persistent nausea and vomiting during pregnancy. It can lead to dehydration, weight loss, and electrolyte imbalances. Morning sickness is mild nausea and vomiting that occurs early in pregnancy. So we're talking about something that can last the whole pregnancy, that can land people in a hospital needing IV fluids. And from what I've heard from, unfortunately, more than just Alyssa, is that for someone who exists in a larger body with HG and who is losing weight during their pregnancy, while they are saying to their care provider, listen to me, I'm struggling, I'm suffering, they are being praised for weight loss. So I just, that's the gravity of HG. And Alyssa, I'm just really eager to hear your whole story unfold. So thank you again for coming on.
Thank you. I'm looking a little teared up right now just to hear you say that, because, you know, it just, you understand.
I do. Yeah.
You know, to a certain extent, what it's like. Yeah. With my son, I didn't have full blown HG, but I had what they categorized as severe morning sickness. I found that the only way I could keep the nausea at bay was just like constantly eating carbohydrates. You know, I was snacking on bread, snacking on top ramen, eating those things. And if I had a full belly, I wasn't completely like sick all day long.
Wow.
So my pregnancy with him, I ended up ultimately gaining 45 pounds. And I remember every appointment, I'm so sick. I'm so sick. Like, what can I do? What can I do? And my doctor would say, well, clearly it's not an issue because you're gaining weight and you're gaining a lot of weight.
Wow. So, you, and I want to go to the beginning of your story and walk it through. But for you, the experience wasn't, you know, the weight loss that so many people experience. It was like, I found this thing that helps me cope through something. Right. I can't even imagine being nauseous 24/7. And so you were experiencing weight gain. And so your concerns were completely dismissed. I mean, either side of that coin is absolutely horrible. And I'm so sorry that this is your story. But let's start at the beginning of your story, because I'm sure that, you know, we love birth stories here on the Plus Mommy Podcast. So I want to hear the whole journey, knowing that, you know, HG is the underlining story here. So let us know from the beginning, were you planning to get pregnant? Was this a surprise?
He was very much a surprise. He was our honeymoon surprise.
Oh, how fun. That's awesome.
I remember telling my mom, I brought home more than the souvenir from our honeymoon.
That's so cool. That is a love child. I love it.
Exactly. There was just too much good food and good wine and good everything else that trip. So he was very much a surprise. At the time, I owned a bakery.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was very intense. I was working about 120 hours a week doing wedding cakes, birthday cakes, event cakes, and then like a full showcase of pastries. I would have like 40 different items, and I was open 4 days a week.
Oh my goodness. I'm married to a baker, so you're speaking my language, but I can't even imagine him also baking and owning a bakery. Oh my goodness. That is physically intense work too.
Oh yes. I mean, like, my easy day was around 14 hours. My long day was up to 22 at times, where I would just nap for 2 hours and then have to do a cake delivery and like bake off the croissants and do all the things.
Wow. So here you are, newly pregnant, with a job that is very physically, emotionally, and all the ways demanding.
Yes. And I had grown my little bakery business from like a farmer's market stand to like a little bakery to then like a full-blown brick and mortar.
Wow.
And so it was still, you know, I had the brick and mortar store for about, I think, close to 2 years by the time my husband and I got married, and then surprise. So I wasn't really at a place where I could pay somebody to be me and do all the hours that I was doing. And
yeah,
I was doing all of the event cakes, and I had two high school students that I trained to bake, and they baked with me after school. So that was like the gist of the help that I had. So with being sick for so long, I ultimately had to close down the bakery and sell the business.
Oh, Liz, I'm so sorry.
It was difficult because it was my dream since I was 12 to have a bakery, but I kind of realized, you know, I always had wanted to be a mother anyways. It wasn't on the timeline that I had wanted, but I knew that, you know, it was just time for the next chapter in my life, and I could always go back, and I could always do event cakes for people at home and do all that. So it was sad to say goodbye, but I mean, this little guy lights my life up, so it was well worth it.
Yeah. Wow. How far along were you into your pregnancy where you were starting to experience this extreme nausea?
It was pretty immediate. I remember I took a test, like obviously we weren't trying, so I don't know how many days I had ovulated or anything like that. But I remember taking a test 3 days before my period was due because I was feeling so sick in the morning. I was like, I feel like I'm hungover. Maybe just because I'm so tired. It was like, I found out I was pregnant in August, and that's wedding season. So there's like constantly cakes going out. And I took a test and it was blazing positive. And I like screamed for my husband at 6 a.m. like, oh my God, we're pregnant.
Wow.
And he's like, how did you know? I was like, I just felt so sick already. Mm-hmm. We ended up seeing my mom that day. And I just remember I was like barfing like before seeing her. And I'm like, maybe I'm nervous. Maybe it's this. And she's like, you're pregnant.
A mother knows.
Yes. Well, my mom experienced HG that went undiagnosed with me. So I think she just kind of knew right then and there. But she had it for about, I think she said like 20 weeks. She felt pretty sick.
Yeah.
So she's like, hopefully, you know, that's not the case with you. But I was sick. So I was kind of prepared to be sick for the long haul. But around 4 months, I was like, I can't do this anymore. I couldn't drive to work. I'd be like dry heaving on my way to work, and I have to like pull over off the freeway shoulder. Like, it was just too much. So at that point, I was like, it's time.
That's when you closed down your business, was about 4 months.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I had customers that were just like, don't you know how contraception works? Why would you get pregnant right now? And why would you do this?
I'm just That's not okay. I'm so sorry.
Come on, people.
Yeah. Like,
I'm allowed to have happiness in my life. You're allowed to have yours. I know I'm a business, but come on.
Absolutely. Oh, that's not okay. I'm so sorry.
No.
How was your experience with your care provider just in general? Did you feel like you had connected with someone who was size friendly from the beginning?
I had seen that doctor for probably 6 years for just like my well women's exams and like things like that.
Okay.
I never felt really like discriminated against due to my size, but I also, my weight would kind of fluctuate a lot in that time. So I would go from, you know, came home from culinary school, I had gained like 70 pounds, and I had lost it all prior to seeing her just from working. So I think if she had seen me heavier, then I would have had to deal with that. But seeing her in a smaller weight and a smaller size, it wasn't something that was able to be perceived or felt.
Got it.
And then when I started kind of rapidly gaining weight in pregnancy, that's when I really felt it.
Wow. So when did you start talking to your care provider of, you know, something isn't quite right? This doesn't feel like it should be normal.
I think I brought it up at my like 8 week appointment. I saw her at 7 weeks for like my initial.
So early on. Yeah.
So pretty early on. And then at the 8 week appointment, because there was some issues with like dating for the first ultrasound. So they wanted me to come back a week later. And I said, am I supposed to be this sick? Like, I'm just having a hard time like eating anything besides bread at this point. And she's like, you know, nausea, it's part of pregnancy. It'll probably go away at like 12 weeks and you won't have any issues. So I said, okay. And I kind of just like chopped it up as, you know, pregnancy and that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think at the next month appointment, I brought it up again. And she said, well, you've gained 10 pounds. So I don't think you're having a problem keeping food and water down. So I don't want to prescribe you any medication. And I was like, but I'm throwing up or dry heaving. And I'm like, I have to work and I have a really busy schedule and this, that, and the other. And she's like, well, I don't like to give my patients medication if they don't absolutely need it. And I don't think you absolutely need it at this point.
Wow. And you had found, how did you find that carbs helped you? I mean, doing the research that I did for HD, it is true, like filling your body in carbs can help. How did you figure out that that was something that helped you?
I am someone who gets like car sick or like seasick. So I've experienced nausea like quite frequently in life. And I just find like, you know, eating some crackers has kind of always helped in that situation. So I just kind of applied it to this. And I found that like, you know, toast was my best friend. And my mom also was like, I could only eat toast for probably the first 3 months.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I remember you, I would lay in bed and not even move my body and reach for a fiber cracker and I'd eat that. And without that in the mornings, because I just had morning sickness in the beginning, like so many people do. And it really helped. I feel very bad saying this to you, Alyssa, please still be friends with me, but I maybe threw up 5 or 6 times. That was it the whole time. But I figured out a routine that worked for me. And I feel like we all do. And you knowing that this was helping you to even be able to function and try to run a business in the beginning. And yet, because the number on the scale was going up because you were just trying to cope and also feed your body and your baby, you weren't being taken seriously for the severity of your nausea while explaining to your care provider how prevalent it was.
Yeah. And I did bring up to her, like, you know, my mom, I didn't know at the time that, you know, hyperemesis, the term, I didn't know the sickness. My mom was never diagnosed with it. You know, she was pregnant in the 90s. They weren't really diagnosing that at the time. So I didn't really know how to kind of stand up for myself and say, hey, like, there's something here. But it's like, my mom was really sick. Could it be something that, you know, is I'm sick too? And she's like, well, that's sometimes a genetic thing. Like if your mom has a hard pregnancy, you can have a hard pregnancy, but again, very dismissed. And then just didn't care to kind of go in deeper. I asked her, is there anything else? Like, what can I be doing to try and get the nutrients in too, on top of just eating carbs? Like I need to get protein in and I'm not, what can I do? And she was just like, smoothies, try that. Bye.
At any point, did you think, maybe I want to get a second opinion or talk to another care provider? I know there's a lot of hurdles. I'm not trying to make you feel bad. I'm just curious.
Yes, I actually switched care around 24 weeks.
Oh, great.
I ended up becoming like a birth junkie and was listening to all these podcasts and the business of being born and like diving into all of that because I was very fearful of childbirth. My mom always made it sound like the most traumatic thing. So I was like, if I know more, maybe I won't be so afraid. And then I hired a doula and we got into a Bradley Method class with her. And she brought up HG and I was like, whoa, this is a thing. And then she had HG for 2 pregnancies. So she spoke about it. And I was like, I don't know if I had it that bad, but I'm pretty sick and like I'm sick for this long. So maybe I have something like along those lines. And she was really talking about, you know, advocating for yourself, getting a provider that works for you. So I ended up switching care.
What was that like?
It was a little difficult because my doctor's office was like a bad breakup and they wouldn't help like transfer my medical records or anything like that. Such a pain. But I really wanted a midwife. My husband and my mom, who's going to be my other support person, were very nervous about me having like a birth center birth because it was just the first baby and they didn't know what was going to happen. And so I ended up going with a CNM who could deliver me at the hospital.
And that's a certified nurse midwife for anyone who isn't sure. So it's yes. a midwife that works in the hospital setting, just like you said. Yeah, I think it's wonderful care to have that balance in between. I want maybe a more holistic approach, but I don't, or my family maybe isn't as supportive for home birth or, you know, birth center birth, but you can still have, a bit more of a holistic and unmedicated, if you choose, experience in the hospital, or if you change your mind, you're in a hospital, so you can opt for other supportive interventions.
It definitely felt like the best of both worlds.
Yeah. What was that, beyond just the care around HG, what was that experience like transferring from the obstetrical model of care to the midwifery?
In all honesty, now that I have flash forward a little bit and have a midwife now, as a certified professional midwife, I could see that the care I was getting from the CNM wasn't that much different from my OBG.
Got it. So for sometimes it can be more of a, people will say a medwife. So it's very medicalized philosophies versus more holistic. And so that's why we always talk about really interviewing people and asking people like, well, what is your birth philosophy? And, you know, there's all care providers go in with their own, you know, views on things too. So just because a midwife works in a hospital doesn't mean that they are more of that holistic minded.
Right. Yeah. I definitely think I got better care from her. She was a little bit more compassionate, but she also didn't want to give me meds. Because she brought up that I was maintaining weight fine. And ultimately, I did get body shamed by her like towards the end. So I was like, this isn't very comfortable. And now she's going to see my body ultimately like go into labor and see me in all my glory.
Yeah. Do you feel comfortable sharing what was said?
Yeah, they do the belly measurements, and I never really liked to do the belly measurements because that's like my sensitive zone. My stomach has always carried a few extra pounds, and it's been something that I've been working on trying to love about myself more.
Yeah.
But I remember they would measure my belly and every week I would be right on target. And then around 34 weeks, I was measuring 2 weeks ahead. And so I remember asking her, does that mean my baby's going to come early if I'm measuring 2 weeks ahead? And she's like, no, not necessarily. She said, honestly, it's because you have fat on that part of your body and you're overweight that you're measuring ahead.
Mm-hmm. Ouch. Yeah, that must have stung. I mean, she's not incorrect in what she's saying. It's right. The way it's being said. And I'm sorry because, it stung me when you said it, like the ouch.
Yeah. I mean, it could have been, like you said, delivered differently in a more respectful way. And I remember telling her, well, I only gained a pound this time and I've measured on time, like all up until now. So what makes that much of a difference? And she goes, I just told you it's your body.
Oh.
So it felt very like, you know, like your fault. It's your body. And then, you know, to say that there's fat and you're overweight and this, that, and the other, and you're pregnant, you're sensitive. I'm in the third trimester. Like, I know I'm bigger. Like, you don't have to point it out in a rude way.
No.
So I remember just feeling dismissed by it too. Like I wasn't given really, I felt like a good explanation as to why.
Yeah. Did she offer any other suggestions for remedies with the HG aside from just saying, I'm not going to prescribe medicine because you haven't lost weight? And I want to say clearly, like, I don't know if that's the protocol. I don't know if there are certain markers, and to get medicine, weight loss needs to be one of them for HG. I want to make sure we're not giving any medical advice on this episode. But to me, it sounds like your concerns were never really heard by either care provider. But I'm curious if this midwife made other suggestions.
No, never.
Wow.
It was just kind of cope.
See, that's disappointing to me. Yeah. whether or not medication they want to see weight loss or not. But I mean, you clearly were throughout your pregnancy having severe nonstop nausea enough that you needed to shut down your whole business.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't ever feel like the, like either provider was really listening to me. Like I would tell them I had to close up shop. Like this is life altering. Like this isn't normal. And it was just constantly going back to the weight and like, well, we don't think you have anything wrong, or, well, it can't be that bad, or, you know. And I remember like the instant my son was born, the nausea went away.
Yeah. You had HG. Yeah. I mean, I I'm not a doctor, but I mean, everything you've said, it could have been mild, but like, yeah, I mean, that's the only thing that makes it stop is giving birth.
Yeah.
Were you ever to the point, and some people have shared this, where they've gotten so dehydrated they've had to go to the emergency room?
With my son, I didn't. This pregnancy, I've had to go a few times in for liquids. But with him, I managed to keep water down. I managed to keep food down. I mean, I did a lot of dry heaving and I had the nausea the whole time. But I was thankfully at least able to stay pretty hydrated. I did ultimately go into labor early at 36 weeks with him. And my midwife now has explained that dehydration can kind of weaken your bag of waters, or like not eating all the other nutrients that you need can weaken that as well, which can cause, you know, the preterm labor. So
yeah, I mean, that's one of the risk factors is preterm labor and lack of nutrients and like all of the things that you're saying. Hey, is there anything else I can do to get protein? Is there? And again, not a care provider. I shouldn't have said you had HD, but it sounds to me like, you know, whether it was a more mild case of it, you didn't just have morning sickness. This was severe, persistent nausea that lasted well beyond those first 12 to 13 weeks of pregnancy. I mean, you sound like the description that I read.
Right.
So, yeah. Wow. Oh my goodness. What was your birth experience like? You go into labor so early. Was that like, oh my gosh, 36 weeks, not quite at term?
We were definitely freaked out. We were house sitting for my mom. My mom's birthday was the weekend before, or before I gave birth ultimately. So she was out of town. So when my water broke at midnight, I'm like, my mom's out of town. I don't know. I'm not at home. I don't have this. I don't have that. And we were just, a little nervous to see what complications could come from a 36-week baby.
Yeah.
I myself was born at 36 weeks.
Interesting.
I know, right?
And your mom was also nauseous throughout your pregnancy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I personally didn't have any complications. I mean, they had a hard time with like tracking my heart rate and things. So I had almost a pretty similar birth that my mom had with me, which was kind of interesting to me.
Yeah.
It was very much forced intervention on intervention. When I first got to the hospital, they didn't believe me that my water was broken. They're like, you probably peed on yourself. And I'm like, no, it keeps coming out. I'm pretty sure my water's broken.
Yeah.
So they did like the litmus test with the strips or whatever. And they're like, oh no, your water's broken. You're having a baby. And I wanted to do unmedicated. That was the goal, or what I had wanted for my birth. But, I was, open to whatever was going to happen, especially with a preterm baby. So they let me labor for 12 hours because my water had broken. And at that point they're like, we have to give you Pitocin. It's hospital policy.
You're on a clock. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, I don't have a fever. Baby's not in distress. They're like, we're going to give you Pitocin. So the deal was that they would give me the lowest dose of Pitocin. And then we would try and see, because at that point, after 12 hours, I was already dilated to 7.
Oh, wow.
So I'm like, I'm so close. So you were progressing.
Yeah.
So they ultimately gave me the Pitocin, and then they would just come in and up it while I wasn't like really aware. And then the contractions just got too bad, and they couldn't keep, they couldn't get the heart monitor for my son to like keep him in place for like 20 minutes. I guess he kept moving, or they kept losing the signal or whatever. So they wanted to do the, internal fetal monitor.
Yeah. That's fairly common. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't really want it. I tried to fight against it, but again, it's like you're in their house. It's their rules. You don't really get a super say sometimes on what it is that you want. So,
yeah.
they wouldn't let me move out of bed with the internal monitor. And I have two discs that are herniated in my back from like a work injury.
So between
the Pitocin contractions, the internal monitor, like not being able to get out of bed, yeah, and then they would tell me like, you have to stay, you know, where you are. I ultimately was like, give me the epidural because I was having like nerve spasms on top of the contractions.
Oh, absolutely. You did the right thing. Like if you're in pain in other ways and you like your body needs to be able to relax enough to allow it to open up and for labor to progress. Yeah. I always say epidural is a wonderful tool and we can go into, you know, our birth plans having thoughts, but like you experience things can go in multiple different ways and just to always be open-minded. And yeah, you lasted well over 12 hours without it. I mean, that's incredible. So you did what you needed to and exactly what you needed for your baby too.
Yeah. And I just remember like looking at my husband and saying, I'm suffering now. So now it's time. Like, it's just too much. So they gave me the epidural. My body did not react to the epidural well. I was throwing up the whole time. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm already used to it, I guess. And then my heart rate just kept dropping significantly. So they had to come in. The anesthesiologist came in, I think, three times to give me meds to keep my heart rate, to get it to normalize.
Wow.
And then I remember they're saying, okay, baby's showing signs of distress. So I said, well, it's funny that you say that because I think I need to push.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, no, you're not having this baby tonight, honey. You've only been in labor for like 15 hours. And I'm like, no. Like, I feel like I could put my hand down there and touch his head. Like I think he's coming. So sure enough, they come to check me. They're like, oh yeah, your time ready to push. Let's do this.
Wow. You know your body. And it just upsets me when people aren't believed.
Right. Yeah. And it's just like, I know I'm a first time mom. I know this is my first labor, but can you give me some credit for like being in tune with my body and knowing what's going on? Because you're not living it right now. I am.
Right. Wow. Well, I'm glad that you were in, you know, ready to give birth too.
Yeah.
And so what was that experience like?
It was amazing and beautiful and all the things that they say that, aww, you know, when babies come into the world. I had it really easy for a first time mom. I pushed for 15 minutes.
Wow.
I didn't like rip or tear or anything like that. So I know that for a lot of first time moms, that's like a thing. The ripping is a higher risk.
Yeah. So, been there, done that.
Yeah. And then they just put him on my chest and I just felt like the angels were singing.
Oh, I love it.
He was just so beautiful and healthy. He weighed 6 pounds, 2 ounces at 36 weeks and didn't have any issues. And we were really thankful for that his lungs had developed and everything like that. That's really the big concern with preterm babies is that their lungs aren't ready to go. So yeah, he did have some issues when he came home with his weight. And since he was preterm, like nursing was a little difficult in the beginning. I had to pump a lot. I had to SNS tube feed him. And then nursing would take like 1.5 to 2 hours with him. And I'd have to like undress him or take his diaper off or like wake him up so that he could nurse.
Yeah, those little ones like to sleep and not eat enough. And we got to get them to eat.
Exactly. And I just remember feeling awful, like waking him up every 2 hours to try and eat. Like, you're supposed to be sleeping, but I need you to eat too.
Yeah. You're doing all the right things.
Yes.
And immediately the nausea went away?
Went away completely.
Wow.
And I was like, get me a cheeseburger.
I love it.
My sister-in-law brought In-N-Out because I was like, I want to eat a good burger right now.
That is an outstanding choice. I support that completely.
Yes.
Wow. So looking back on it all, is there any, I mean, it sounds like you did everything you could have to try to advocate for yourself, including switching care providers and hiring a doula that had experience with HG. You did all the things and you still weren't listened to. And that just enrages me. And I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it was difficult because I felt almost like I must be a pushover because nobody listened, or I must not have had it that bad because nobody listened.
Yeah.
So I don't think the whole experience bothered me as a whole until we decided to start trying for baby number two and dealing with providers again. Was I just amazed on how I was being mistreated for so long.
Are you plus size and pregnant or trying to conceive? Do you wonder where you can find cute plus size maternity clothes or when you'll start showing and how to embrace your pregnant body? What about having a healthy pregnancy and how to reduce your increased risk? Find the answers to these questions and so much more within the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide and audiobook. From nutrition and physical activity to prenatal care expectations and the importance of hiring a size-friendly care provider, you'll not only learn information to help you make informed decisions throughout your pregnancy, but start to develop a new relationship with your body. Download this guide and start using it at any point in your pregnancy. Stop Googling and start feeling empowered today. Use code PLUSMOMMY to get 20% off the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide and audiobook. So do you feel like you've found someone that treats you with evidence-based compassionate care now?
Definitely. It's like light and day difference.
Wow.
I would go into my normal doctor's office and like I have really perfect blood pressure usually. And every time they put me on the scale, my blood pressure would be up. Or like I would see them and my blood pressure would be up. With my midwife, I'm like cool as a cucumber. It's like all my vitals are great. You can just see the difference that my body has with the care.
Yeah. And are you planning, you said a CPM, so that's a certified professional midwife. Are you planning a home birth with this?
I am.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for that. God willing, my water stays intact until 37 weeks.
Yeah, because you're experiencing the signs and symptoms of HG with this pregnancy as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, so after my son, I think he was about a year old when we decided that we would try again for the next baby. My husband is one of four and his two brothers, they're all back to back to back. So he wanted, you know, kids close in age and all these things. I was like, okay, like I'm totally ready for baby number two. Like, bring it on. We started trying and we got pregnant instantly, like 3 weeks after trying, but ultimately we lost that pregnancy.
I'm so sorry for your loss.
Thank you. It was difficult to experience that after like having a surprise baby where we weren't trying and then get pregnant and then have a loss.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, going to my doctor and she wasn't available to see me. So I saw like whoever else and they weren't very compassionate. It was very awkward. It was very uncomfortable. She was just kind of like, you're having a miscarriage. Come back for blood work in a week.
Oh my gosh. And it was like,
okay. So I went back the next week, got blood work done, ultimately talked to the CNM who had delivered my son. I was getting care from her still. And she said, go ahead and keep trying. What you had is called a chemical pregnancy. We'll count that as your period and like you can try again. So the next month we got pregnant again. And then I called her pretty much immediately. Like, what's the protocol if I had a miscarriage like already? Do I need to come in? We need to monitor like my HCG levels, like what can we do? I was still nursing my son, so I wasn't aware if like that was causing any issues. So she said, you know, call, it's, you're still really early. So we'll see you at your 8 week appointment. Until then, just, you know, live life. And I think 3 days after I got that positive test, I was sick. I was just throwing up and nauseous and all the things. So it was like, okay, well, maybe like this one's going to last because I'm so sick already. And like, maybe this will be fine. And then I started bleeding maybe 2 days after that. So I called her and she was saying, well, some bleeding can be normal. You'll probably find COVID hit at that time. So we were on lockdown.
Oh, wow.
And so she's like, you could go to the ER if you feel necessary, but you know, we just locked down. So I wouldn't suggest it. And she says, call me back in 2 weeks if you're still getting a positive pregnancy test. And I remember thinking, that's what you're going to give me? Call me in 2 weeks if I'm still pregnant? And so ultimately the bleeding got heavier and heavier, and it lasted, I think, for like 6 or 7 days. So we have an OBGYN urgent care close to my house where they only see women who are pregnant or have like gynecological emergency.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'll go there because they don't have sick patients. And then they tracked my HCG. They couldn't confirm if I had an ectopic or like retaining tissue.
Yeah.
But it took my body 7 weeks to fully pass that pregnancy.
Wow. And you needed support around that. And I'm glad you found it on your own, but I'm sorry that you weren't supported more. And I know that was a hard time for everyone when the world just immediately turned upside down, but here you are in your own family crisis and right. going through something physically that you, I'm so sorry.
And having to do all of those appointments by myself too was difficult, yeah. You know, when they're like, we're not sure if you're miscarrying or you are miscarrying. So that was very difficult. But the doctor that I had found, the OBGYN, I was like, I really like her. She was really proactive and like wanting to get me pregnant again. And, you know, I felt very compassionate and thoughtful. She held my hand while I cried. And, it was a good support. I was with her for probably 6 or 7 months, just kind of like checking in and doing blood work while we were trying to get pregnant. And we were having a difficult time. I was ovulating and we were doing, you know, the timed intercourse, and we were doing everything we thought was right, but it's still just, I wasn't getting pregnant. So she wanted to perform a laparoscopy surgery where they go in through like your belly button and like your two incisions on your side, and then a hysteroscopy where they go internally with a camera into your uterus. And then she wanted to flush my tubes to make sure like everything was clear. So I go through the surgery. I feel pretty confident with this doctor. She's never said anything to me about my weight for preconception, anything like that. A week after surgery, I get a positive pregnancy test.
Wow.
And I'm like, how is this possible? Like, they flushed my tubes, they flushed fluid in my uterus. They ultimately found out that I had a little bit of endometriosis, so they removed that. They found that I had a polyp, they removed that. And she said that sometimes polyps, they just take up space where an egg could implant, so removing them can be helpful. Yeah. And then she said that I have polycystic ovaries. So,
interesting.
She was really good with the surgery. I healed very well. But again, like a week later, they're like, this is impossible. We flushed you out. Like, we removed things. Like, we don't know how you didn't get a positive pregnancy test before surgery. So it was very difficult those first few weeks. We didn't know if I was going to miscarry because of the surgery.
Right. Wow.
We didn't know if the flushing of my tubes caused the egg to go into my fallopian tubes and implant like an ectopic. So we kept a very good eye on it. I was getting beta draws every couple days. I had my earliest ultrasound was like 5 weeks pregnant. And everything turned out, you know, was turning out well, and the doctors were getting more hopeful. And then boom, at 5 weeks, I'm sick. Oh. And I'm like, oh no, it's here. But I've, you know, it's my double rainbow baby. I'm here. We're going to do this. I'll be sick. It's worth it in the end.
Yeah.
And it just kind of progressively got worse, and it was different than with my son. I was actually like puking up fluids, like vomiting. Whereas before, I would vomit occasionally, but I would dry heave mostly.
Got it.
So with this pregnancy, I was just constantly sick, and I felt like much more fatigued. I couldn't drink more than about 4 ounces of liquid without vomiting it up. Like, it was just too much in my stomach. So I told a doctor right away, and she said, well, early pregnancy, I brought up to her that I was sick with my son the whole
time.
Your
history. Yeah.
Yeah. And so she said that she would prescribe me a medication. So she prescribed me Bongesta, which is, I think, the only medication right now that's approved for HG.
Okay.
And it didn't really work for me. So.
Oh no.
I know. I saw her like 2 weeks after that, because in the beginning I was seeing her every 2 weeks. And she prescribed Reglan, which I took Reglan for a while, but it wasn't really working either. They wanted to give me Zofran, but you can't take Zofran in your first trimester.
Mm.
So I was like, okay, well, I'll just take the Reglan and kind of go back to my previous coping mechanisms. I was eating a lot of carbs.
Yeah.
And nothing was really helping, but at least I could eat a bagel, I thought, right?
Yeah.
And so my first, I think by 10 weeks, I had gained 12 pounds. And she was like, what's up with this weight gain? And I was, I was like, well, the only thing I can keep down is bread right now. Everything else, I said, and then my food aversions, I can't even look at meat. I can't look at vegetables. I can't smell anything cooking. Like, I can't. So she's like, well, I guess, you know, first trimester survival. So let's get you through it. And then let's try and work on not gaining so much weight. So I was already kind of like nervous. I was already feeling like my heart rate go up when I'd step on the scale. I was already getting to that point, which took me 3 trimesters to get to with my son. So I was already experiencing that on top of feeling sick. And it just progressively got worse. So she ultimately gave me the Zofran, and the Zofran has a lot of side effects. So it'll give you migraines. It'll give you drowsiness. It will give you dizziness. Oh. And then you just feel like you're almost sick, like your body took a hit, like your immune system's down.
And you have a young child at home to care for as well.
Yes. So I'm trying to like run after a toddler, be sick, throw up. My husband's an elevator mechanic, and like business is booming during COVID because all of these companies are redoing their elevators. So
Working, because there's not people in the office. Yeah. Exactly. So he's busy.
Yeah. So he's gone 14 hours a day, and I'm trying to like manage all of this. So I'm telling her this. And again, she goes, well, you definitely have severe morning sickness, but I don't think you have HG yet because you've gained 12 pounds.
Again, with the weight gain, you know, I have to ask, and you know, I'm sure people will come across critical, but I wonder if that's said to thin women or thin pregnant people who are having all that you did and only gaining weight. I wonder if they're still diagnosed with HD, but because you exist in a larger body, you're not. And I could just be making assumptions, but it is so frustrating to not be really heard and listened to when you're not like, oh, I'm going to eat as many carbs today as I can. This is fun. You're like, no, I'm just literally trying to survive at this point.
Yeah, exactly. And I think too, it's hard because at that time, my doctor did suspect that maybe I had PCOS because of the polycystic ovaries, even though I didn't have any like issues with my hormones or anything like that would point to it. So I'm like, carbs react to my body differently. I look at a carb and I gain 5 pounds. So to me, I wasn't super alarmed because it's not like I was eating that abundantly, but I was mostly eating bagels or top ramen or, you know, something that I could manage to keep down. So it wasn't until I think I saw her at 15 weeks, I had lost like 6 pounds. I had gotten much sicker. I was, you know, throwing up much more. I was having complete migraines. I was having to lay on the floor, like lay in the bathroom, like trying to handle, you know, toddler and everything else. So during his nap time, I was, you know, trying to throw up as much as I could and everything else. And I walked in and she goes, I'm so happy you lost 6 pounds.
Oh my gosh.
And then after that, I just like looked at her, like, I didn't even know what to say to that point. I'm like, I'm pretty miserable. I'm really dehydrated. I think I need fluids. I'm having migraines, I think, from the Zofran, this, that, and the other. And she goes, well, keep taking the Zofran. Keep trying to have a variety of foods that you're eating now. And, you know, keep up the work on the weight loss. She's like, with a woman of your BMI, you should not gain very much at all during pregnancy. So I'm happy that you've lost some weight. And then she gives me this piece of paper saying that I need to go to an MFM, maternal fetal medicine doctor, to have an ultrasound done because of obesity, because of my BMI.
Meanwhile, you're like, I think I'm severely dehydrated and not getting nourishing nutrients into my body right now.
Right.
Wow.
Completely disregarding everything that I had like brought up to her. And I asked her, I said, why is it that you feel that I need to get specific imaging done at an MFM when you guys have done imaging here and had no issue with my anatomy? And she's like, well, because of your BMI, I'm pretty much going to guarantee that you're going to get gestational diabetes.
No. Oh, gosh. Red flags. All the red. I mean, there were red flags before, but now they're like blaring. Yeah.
Exactly. So then I said, well, I didn't have gestational diabetes with my son. And she's like, well, your BMI is going to suggest that you're going to get gestational diabetes. It's also going to suggest that you're going to get preeclampsia.
You're going to get what? Oh,
and I went home that day and I was like, I need to find a midwife. I'm not doing this. I'm not playing this game. I'm not going to be treated this way. And it was so ironic to me because I had been listening to the show. I don't remember who you had. Oh, you had the woman from Evidence-Based Birth on.
Yeah, Rebecca Decker.
Yes. And you guys were talking about, you know, what your BMI is and how it doesn't mean you're going to get gestational diabetes and the percentage doesn't go up that high and there's no correlation for preeclampsia. And I remember just thinking, this doctor is so size biased. She has no information that's up to date.
Yeah. I mean, there are slight increased risks, right, but the odds are in your favor of having a healthy pregnancy. And we should never just assume because of the way someone looks that they will automatically get something. We should be testing for gestational diabetes and doing nutritional counseling, but you weren't even getting that. You were just being told, oh, I'm so glad you gained weight today, instead of like, oh, so you're not eating at all? Like there was there's such a gap there. And it, yes, does point to a clear bias and just to being told you're going to get gestational diabetes, you're going to get preeclampsia. Oh, I'm so sorry. And so you listened to your gut and you said enough is enough and I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Yeah. It was hard for me in that moment to try and stick up for myself. So just kind of like took it in. And then I came home. I'm like, nope. I'm not going to pay this woman. I'm not going to contribute to her being size biased. And I immediately went out and I found some midwives. I have been working with a therapist who specializes in pregnancy loss, and her husband has a birth podcast also.
Oh, wonderful.
And they know a lot of birth people in the area. So she suggested a lot of midwives to me. And that was my first question to all of them. Do you have a BMI cap? Are you a plus size provider? Will you work with size friendly people? What is your portfolio like? Have you worked with a woman of my size before? And it was so amazing to me that all of these midwives looked at me like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, you're a person. I don't understand why you're asking me this question. You're a pregnant woman. And I'm like, well, I've had horrible care with providers. It's always been a thing. I said, I honestly feel like I'm being seen as an overweight woman before I'm seen as a person or seen as a pregnant woman.
Yeah.
So it's really important to me that you're seeing me as a person, one, a pregnant person, two, and not even at all as an overweight woman.
Yeah.
So I found a midwife that I clicked with really well. And she's like, I can't believe these were concerns that you've had because they're not issues. You had a healthy pregnancy with your son, minus being sick. You're low risk. I don't have any issues of like giving you care. And she's actually listened to all of the issues I've had with HD. You know, I'm telling her I've had to get fluids 6 times. And she's like, get the home health service to come to give you fluids. You got a toddler at home, make it easier for yourself, or try these supplements or do these things that have been just so much helpful. And I've been in her care for the past 2 months. It's completely changed my view on prenatal care. And I'm like, why doesn't every woman just get a midwife? Like, why aren't they just given to you? Like, you get a midwife, you get a midwife.
You sound like me on the show. I mean, we all have to decide what is best for us. And I do have to ask because, you know, for pregnancy number one, your family was like, we don't even want to do a birth center. So how has it gotten to the point now where your husband's on board with having a home birth? Has he just seen the difference in care that you received or what was it like to go from that?
I think with my husband, he really saw the effect that the providers were having on me. Like, I would come home after appointments crying and I would say, this is what they think that's going to happen. And they're scaring me for reasons that we can't predict. Like, maybe I do get gestational diabetes, but it's not the end of the world. I can lifestyle change or diet change possibly. If I have to get insulin, then I do that. But it's not the end of the world. I said, they're freaking me out over reasons that we don't need to freak out yet on.
Yes.
And he was very much like, you're the one who's giving birth. You're the one who needs to be in the driver's seat. If this is what you want, I fully support it.
That's awesome. Every partner should be that way. Yes. Yeah. I mean, he's got you know, whoever the partner is, they have to feel comfortable with it, because you don't want that energy while you're giving birth of, oh my goodness, you know, you want everyone. But we know that for, you know, low risk, healthy individuals, home birth and out of hospital birth and birth center birth should be an option. And you're being screened throughout your whole pregnancy. And if you were to develop preeclampsia, which someone of any size can develop, then you would no longer be a candidate possibly. And so there's a lot in place to look out for your overall health and the health of your baby. But you need to be treated with respect and compassion. And I hear often of people leaving, you know, the hospital system to give birth out of hospital because they are so tired of being mistreated. And while I fully support home birth and birth center birth, I wish that it wasn't something that people felt pushed out of the hospital birthing system. That to me is heartbreaking. And I am fully supportive of midwives, and I talk about midwives all the time. I switched from an OB to a midwife and gave birth in a hospital and had a very holistic, unmedicated birth experience. So I know it can happen. And I think, again, home birth is a great option. I just wish that people didn't feel like it was their only option to receive dignified care. That's what angers me so much.
Yeah, you're definitely, I think, pinned in like a rock and a hard space sometimes to try and figure out, what am I going to do? Do I have a baby at home and risk possibly something happening? Or do I go to the hospital and get mistreated? Like, what is it that I can do? I wish there was like the super hybrid where you could have it all.
Yeah. And for many people, the hybrid is a birth center. And yet so many birth centers have BMI restrictions.
Yes.
So that you're once again pushed to home
discovered.
Birth.
Yes.
Yeah, you have the BMI restrictions in your area?
I had one place, they do like a pre-screening. It was like the only birth center near me, and they like were for some reason covered under my insurance, which would have been wonderful, right?
Yeah.
But they do a pre-screening process, and my BMI was too high. So they're like, sorry, like you can't give birth here. And I'm just like, that is just so horrible, because we all know BMI is garbage and it doesn't necessarily mean anything about me. And yet you're telling me that I can't give birth in this facility. So I did kind of feel pushed to have a home birth as my option. However, I felt if for some reason I need to go to the hospital and deliver, at least I know I'll have the best prenatal care possible.
Absolutely. And then you'd have, you know, the continuity of care if your midwife, you know, if you had to do a transfer, they would go with you to the hospital. And yeah, I mean, I hope you have a beautiful home birth experience. We've shared home birth on the show for sure. And it's a wonderful, wonderful option. And I'm really, really happy for you and your family that you've found something where you feel supported and heard. Oh my gosh, you feel heard. And how sad that you've had to go through, you know, what is this? This is your fourth care provider throughout all of your, you know, prenatal care to find someone who listens to you.
Yeah. That has been difficult, but I'm definitely not alone in that with being a plus size woman and having HG. I really kind of flocked to the internet for resources, and I found like the HER Foundation, and there's a Reddit page for hyperemesis.
Wow.
So I like logged onto the Reddit page, and there's just so many women saying the same thing. I'm plus size, so nobody cares. Or I haven't lost that much weight, so nobody cares. And it's just horrible, because that's not like one of the markers for HG. You know, they do say it happens. You can lose 5% of like your pre-pregnancy weight. That does scream something's happening, but that's not the end all say all to diagnosing you with HG.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I was getting so frustrated during your first story. I'm like, gosh, why aren't they listening to her? And it really sounds like HG, but I'm not a doctor, but oh my goodness. Yeah, yeah, it's hard. It's so hard that we just have to fight so much more than it should ever be necessary, because ultimately your care provider wants you and your baby to have the healthiest outcome, and you want yourself and your baby to have the healthiest outcome. So why is there this, you know, not believing and not listening happening? It really makes you be like, oh, so just because I exist in this body, you treat me differently. Like, how would you be prescribing? How would you be talking to me right now if I exist in a small body? And that's what people are now starting to ask in doctor's offices. And it sure shifts the conversation. Or saying, please write in my medical records that you will not prescribe XYZ, or you will not do XYZ procedure because of my size. And that also helps to shift the conversation. And I love that we're learning new ways to advocate for ourselves beyond just trying to find that size friendly care provider that can be a needle in a haystack.
Definitely. And I think what's hard is HG can be so detrimental to the mother. Organs start to shut down. Dehydration can cause so many issues, like your nutrients are deficient. So then when you're postpartum, your body's lacking so much. And on top of the mental health issues of dealing with being sick for so long, and how do I find the energy to take my day on when I'm this sick?
Yeah.
There's so many issues that come along with having HG, and then to not even let that person feel heard or give them the correct diagnosis because of their size is just, it's unfathomable the damage that they're causing.
Yes. Can you share with me offline your go-to HG resources? And I'll put them in the show notes over at plusmommy.com. So anyone listening who might be like, wow, I wonder if I had that, they can have really great supportive resources.
Definitely.
Awesome. What is your wisdom to someone listening right now? And it might not just be for HG, but for someone who is plus size and pregnant and struggling to be heard or felt like they are believed.
I think the most important thing is just really listening to your gut and knowing your body best. Nobody's going to know yourself the way you do. And if you think something is wrong, scream it to the hilltops until somebody hears you.
Yeah.
You're going to find a provider who will care and who will listen. It may take some digging. It may take some time, but ultimately you'll get there and you'll be so much better for it.
I agree. And I am just wishing you all the best with this next pregnancy and your upcoming birth. I know you're going through a lot right now dealing with HG, but I'm just so thankful that you wanted to take out this time and share your journeys with us. And I hope it helps someone else to be like, oh, wow, that sounds like my story. And I really am going to advocate. And so thank you, Alyssa. And I know that you had offered, if anyone wanted to reach out to you, that you were going to provide the way that they could connect with you. So do you want to share that now?
Yes, I'm on Instagram. I have two different Instagrams. I have a trying to conceive page where I usually talk about hyperemesis more. And my handle is Let's Try for Two.
I love it.
All together, no spaces. So I do talk about it a lot. I do talk about home birth journey and stuff like that as well. But I do try and talk about HG as much as possible because I find that it's not talked about enough. There's not that much awareness for it. So if you need somebody to talk to or you need some HG tips, I'm always sharing my HG tips. You can find me there.
Ah, well, great. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And again, I really appreciate you sharing your story and for being a listener of the show too. It's neat to be able to talk to people who have learned and felt like the show benefited them. So it's exciting for me too to have you on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been great to talk to you. I usually am hearing you in my kitchen while I'm cooking dinner going, yes, preach. Yes. So thank you very much. And thank you for bringing awareness to HG.
Absolutely. Thanks for reaching out and being like, we need to talk about this. And I'm like, yes, we do. So yeah, this is great. Well, I hope everyone will head to the show notes where you will find plenty of resources and continue that very much needed self-advocacy and trusting your gut when you feel something is wrong and when you feel something is wrong with your care provider too. And it's okay to switch at any point. All right, friends, until next time. Bye.